Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and I'm pushing this button, and it's just not going to work for me today at all. And so I'm going to push this one again, and there it is. There we are. Anyway, with us today is Nate from Strictly Diesel, and Nate's going to be my fly-in partner, and him and I are going to help you out. So if you have a diesel and you've been thinking about exhaust, programmers, an oil leak, a specific code that you can't get rid of the get out of the computer, now's a good time.
Absolutely.
Now's a good time. 602-508-0960. 602-508. We're going to do gas and diesel, but if you have a diesel and it falls within your range, GM, the 66, the Fords, all the way through.
All the way through.
And the Dodges, there's only two, 59s and 67s.
Yep, all the way through.
Okay.
Yep.
So Nate's done a little bit of work when it comes to those kinds of car and trucks, and you've been doing that how long?
Since I graduated high school.
Okay.
I date myself.
Okay. So that was 2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago, yeah. 1990. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have the diesel in your blood in high school?
No, not yet. That took about 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you go through auto mechanics class?
I did, through Glendale Community College, yeah.
All right. And is that what kind of kick-started your...
It did.
Okay.
It did. I was... in a program that allowed me to do all sides of the vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and I was working with the auto transmission guy, which I made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
being his helper, and then one day my shop foreman says, "You go do diesel," and I've been there ever since. So,
okay.
Yeah,
it's just a different smell. That's all.
It's a different smell.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. It's
yep.
It's still combustion. It's still fuel. It's still compression. It's still valves. It's got all that stuff. It's just a different tailpipe smell. That's
yep.
all it is.
For sure. Absolutely.
And there's a little bit more torque and a little bit more power at the on the diesel
torque.
Side.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And when they have pistons that are as big around as a man's waist, then they're really big monsters.
That's a big monster.
Yeah.
I don't touch those, but yeah.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. So if you have a diesel question, or perhaps maybe you're exploring some diesel options, a air filter change or an airbox change, a programmer, what can I do to fix this problem or anything like that with the diesel on the cars we talked about, the 66, the Ford, two Ford motors and the two Dodge motors in the diesel light passenger trucks, then we're home free.
I'll even go back to the 65 or the 62 if you need to.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't forget about those.
Those pieces of you know what.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously there's not many of you left that are going to go back to the 62s and the 66. Is that what it is?
No. 65.
65.
Yeah.
Those were unbelievably bad. Those were General Motors' first attempt at diesels.
They were.
Is there any of them still on the road today?
Yes, there are. We had one at the shop probably 2 months ago. So,
okay.
Yeah, 65.
Are they difficult to diagnose, or once you understand the fundamentals, they're as easier or as difficult as the ones you got now?
They're easier in my mind. Yeah.
Okay.
It's fundamentals, and it's like you say, air, compression, power, you know.
What's the difference between, let's say, a new model GM, the 66, and the 65? Is it the injectors? Is it the timing? Is it the mechanical pump versus anything else? What's the big difference?
All the above.
Okay.
But the 65 is indirect injected, where it squirts into the cylinder head, actually, and the flame starts there.
Okay.
Whereas the Duramax is... And all diesels now are direct injected.
Okay.
Yeah, where it's right into the cylinder.
So. Okay. And so that one is going to squirt at the back of the intake valve, but it's going into the cylinder. But now with direct injection, it's kind of like we replaced the spark plug with an injector.
Yep.
And so we're going to spray diesel right into the
yep.
cylinder.
Yep.
So there's going to be air there because we're still sucking air in.
Yep.
But we're going to atomize the fuel from direct injection, and that's what it means, direct injection.
Yep.
As opposed to having the injector like the throttle body gas motors, where you have a throttle body, a carburetor, so to speak, on top of the intake manifold, and we're going to spray fuel into that area, and
yep.
it's going to be distributed to the cylinders.
Right.
Now, the cylinders closest to it get a little bit more fuel than the cylinders furthest away from it.
Yeah.
But direct injection doesn't do that.
Nope.
The direct injection also has a computer that knows what the heck your foot's doing. So it knows the difference between a spray that sounds like this, tsk, tsk, and when Nate's driving the car, and it sounds like this, a fire hose.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's me. Yep.
It's Mark and Nate are driving their cars because their foot's on the floor or whatever.
Exactly.
And the computer's monitoring that load, speed, RPM, and it quickly looks at a chart and it says, if all of these are supposed to be here, then I better turn on the faucet 52%.
Right.
That's in a simplistic way.
Simplistic way, yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
And the byproducts of diesel is really not much. Other than the black smoke that you're going to see on some hot rods.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And black smoke is overfueled.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Maybe intentional, maybe not. I drove a stock truck the other day that clouded like it had
100%, James Bond.
Yeah. It had 100% over injectors, and it wasn't. It was just carboned up because we have this turbocharger that never gets used. So when someone who puts their foot to the floor gets on it, I clouded the street. And that was the end of it. It was clear after that.
What do you? That's it. You just go run the hell out of it.
Run the heck out of it.
Yeah. Yep. And it's really not a matter of speed. It's a matter of speed of the motor.
Right.
So you can pull it into first gear or second gear, and you can throttle up real hard and stop at 45 and then come back.
Yep.
And then throttle up hard. So it's not like you got to go out in the freeway and do 100 to clean it up. No.
No, definitely not. It's all about the acceleration and the time you're doing it and where your foot's at.
Yeah. So. Okay. So how long did it take you to clean that up?
It was two accelerations.
Seriously.
And it was clean.
And you rattled the heck out of it. Now, how did you know it was clean afterwards? What was gone?
Well, the black smoke we spoke of is no more. It's a clean exhaust. Yep.
But what about all the houses you covered with all the carbon?
it was on our street, so there were a few vehicles that were covered.
Oh.
But, no houses.
What choice do you have?
You don't. You have to do it.
And you have to tell the customer he needs to do it.
I do all the time. Yep.
Yeah. You need to flog this horse more often than you have been.
Yep.
It needs to be flogged once a week. You need to put it to the floor. When you're getting on a freeway is a great place to do it.
Exactly. It's perfect time.
On the on-ramp, just throttle it to the floor and you're going to be doing 65 or a lot higher at the end of the ramp.
I've had so many conversations with people with turbocharged diesels that say they use the low end and they can't get out of their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them it's the exact opposite of that. You got to put your foot to the floor and you got to let it breathe. That's when a diesel's healthy.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Oh, they like it that way.
They like it that way. Yeah.
602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you're inside the Phoenix area, that's the number, 602-508-0960. The toll-free number, if you'd like, is 888-960-9696. And obviously, this is KKNT 960 The Patriot. So that number, 888-960-9696. I had somebody call me the other day, and they said, you don't need to give the toll-free number because we all have cell phones, so we don't pay for for Arizona anyway.
True.
And I said, there are people out there that want the free number. So anyway, 602-508-0960. I like the diesels because people spend happy money on their diesels. Tires, wheels, exhaust, air cleaners, stuff like that. And so when they pick it up, they're happy.
Exactly.
It's not a sad thing where you're going to hand them a bill for $4,285 to do something to their diesel. This is kind of happy money.
It is.
It makes a difference.
For sure.
The last time you had a motor that just came in a basket.
We have one currently.
And who did that, and how did it happen?
It's a long story. I don't know the whole story, but it came from California. They moved, and the shop didn't know what to do with it, so they put everything in the back, and it got towed over.
So you got a basket case.
I got a basket case,
And you don't even know what was wrong with it on the front end.
They had a coolant leak.
Okay.
And they had the heads pulled off. On a 7.3 of all motors, the head gasket doesn't leak like that. So,
So what are you going to do? Tell me what your plan is.
We actually sold them a long block.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, folks, what he's meaning is the engine is in two parts. It's block and heads. And so you're going to transfer the intake manifold and all the stuff that bolts to the motor onto this long block.
Correct.
And so you've eliminated the head gaskets. And if you set the intake manifold right, you've eliminated that from being a water problem.
Sure.
And so it's easy.
Sure. But put together a basket case and hope everything's okay, or put an assembly in and be done with it. You know, it's all the better for the customer. Saves him time and money in the long run, too. So
it's all better for the customer.
It saves us headache. of my customer.
Okay. Let me take the other side of that, and I'm teasing you. I wouldn't do it any other way other than a long block. I am not going to accept the responsibility of an engine that's aspirating water.
Right.
Of an engine that's got a big problem, and I'm thinking I'm just going to go in there and fix it, and you'll find out later that you didn't fix it, then you'll start magnafluxing stuff, and you'll find cracks and all kinds of problems. I'm not going to live with that motor that somebody else tried to fix and couldn't.
Exactly.
So if you want me to work on your car, we're going to start with a long block, which is an engine block and heads and pistons included, cam and everything.
Yep.
And we're going to take all the sheet metal on your motor, the valve covers, the intake manifold, the oil pan, and we're going to put it on this new motor.
Yep. Yep.
And then I'm going to own the whole thing.
Right. Yep. We can put a guarantee on it that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And yeah, that's the tough part. Yep. That's the tough part. And when you get into those kinds of what motor is it?
7.3.
7.3. Sure. Okay. And that's a monster anyway.
Yes.
That really is the epitome, the top of the heap when it comes to muscles and brawn.
Still
is the
to 7.3. Still to this day, yes.
Well, I'll tell you what Alan did the other day that just really made me mad. He almost lost his job over this.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, he found it's a 7.3 in an Excursion.
Yep.
A three-seat Excursion, yep. Rear air, loaded.
Yep.
And it was one of our customers, and he had said something to Alan that, you know, I think I'm getting ready to sell it. And our rule is you got to give them what they ask for. We're not negotiating. So Alan looked up all the tickets we did, and he called him and made him an offer. And he said, that's more than I would have taken, but I'll take your offer. And Alan says, fine. So he's put tires and wheels on. He put some he leveled it out and stuff, and it is a monster.
I bet.
It is. Well, and then he's done all kinds of stuff underneath the hood.
Yeah.
It is a monster.
Great trucks.
Oh, gosh. What couldn't you pull? I think I could move Apache Junction to the west side with that doggone Excursion.
Yeah. They're great trucks. Yeah. It's impressive.
A friend of mine has a 7.3 in a Dodge two-wheel drive one-ton in Payson.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't mean that. It's a Ford.
Yeah. Okay.
And and it's a two-wheel drive one-ton. And I think he wants to sell it. And I said to him, I think you'll have more buyers than you really think. The only bad thing is it would have been nice to one ton be a four-wheel drive, but it's
right.
not.
Right.
So, yeah, I know I just said that the Dodge had a Ford motor in it. I didn't mean that. It's a 7.3 Ford.
7.3 Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good truck.
Anyway, 602-508-0960. And if you have a car question about anything, we'll do gas, we'll do diesel. We'll do the shop said this. We'll do the shop said that. Or we're really good at arguments between husbands and wives. And so if you call up, then you have to fairly represent the argument between you and your spouse. And Nate and I will be happy to chime in. One of the parties won't be happy, but Nate and I, we will. Welcome back, everybody. 19 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. So we're talking diesels and hot rods and stuff like that. And before we go any further, I didn't pick up Bob at the tail end of the last segment, so I'm going to do Bob right now. Bob, thank you for holding. And what can we do for you?
Morning, guys. So, you know, diesel engines were never widely accepted in cars in America. Mm-hmm. And maybe due to the Volkswagen Dieselgate and the emissions, that they could never really meet the emission standards, and now it looks like we're going to electric. So do you think it was really a missed opportunity that diesels could have been widely adopted into passenger cars?
Well, I think that I don't think you're going to pull a boat to the lake in a Tesla. You know what I mean? I think there's always going to be a need for trucks of big gas motors and diesel motors. Because we're not going to be able to do a lot of things. You're not going to be able to do a lot of things with an electric car. And so I think there's always going to be around. Keep in mind that we thought this, what was the first diesel motor that came out, the GM? That 6.2 or 6.5?
I believe the GM one, yeah.
Yeah. And it was the biggest piece of crap that ever came out.
Yeah.
And we all thought it would ruin the diesel market, and it's, in fact, it enhanced the diesel market. And then Dodge and Chevy and Ford and everybody start coming out with stuff. So I don't think that and besides that, diesels today have really clean exhaust.
They do.
Now, I don't know about you, but you can lie as much as you want, but I'm between 16 and 17 miles to the gallon on my Dodge. Are you close?
I'm there with my Ford. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And so, really and truly, the old days, we would have never seen anything other than single-digit fuel economy.
Right.
But today, with all the computers and all the activity going on, it's not uncommon. I'm running up to Payson and back to Payson, and I'm at 16 to 18 miles to the gallon. Unless, of course, some Ford wants to race up the hill, and then I lose a few mile per gallon. But no, it's. I don't think. But you're right. The Audi diesel was a huge mistake. Ford came out. Did Ford ever have a passenger car kind of diesel?
Chevrolet is the only one that does.
The 6.2, 6.5. What was that? That was a 5 liter.
Back in the day, my dad owned an Oldsmobile with a 6.2.
Okay, okay.
That car was, that was his baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has been a missed opportunity as far as the U.S. goes with diesel and cars. But partly because I think they got a bad rap when they first came out with them, being that Oldsmobile and other early vehicles, you know.
No question.
Yeah.
No question.
So, a missed opportunity, I think so, yes.
And I also think that the vehicle emissions of a diesel, we're treating that upstream rather well with the particulate filter and the catalytic converter. So what's coming out of the tailpipes of those are every bit as clean as gasoline cars, as long as you aren't on the floor with the diesel. Because
right.
It will blow a little bit of black smoke. We'll have some particulates with that. But normal driving day to day without being on the floor, it's going to have a clean as exhaust as a Lexus or in some of the other cars that are gasoline powered.
Yep.
So, Bob, did that take care of it for you?
Yeah. I mean, I just think in the economy and some of those early Jettas that had diesels and stuff, I mean, it was through the roof and stuff.
No, you're right. We agree with you. That was the really – that's a bad time of our industry when the cars you talk about, LA diesel and some of those other ones, they were just miserable failures. And I don't know why they did it, and I don't know why they made such but even in gasoline cars, when we first came out and we went away from we went to overhead cam, some of those cars were in the shop all the time for all kinds of problems. And right. When they put rubber timing belts on them, we had problems. So there is an evolution, but I think the diesel is going to survive. That's the end.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. You bet.
All righty, Bob. Thank you very much. Frank, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah. I got a 2007 Toyota RAV4. Now, I was driving on the freeway, and it just, as soon as I got off the freeway, it just clunked out on me. Goes in gear, puts it in gear. But once you try to rev up and go into another gear, it just revs right back down, and I can't get it past 2 or 3 miles an hour.
So is this an issue of fuel delivery and power, or is this a transmission that's going into neutral? Can you rev the car up on a higher RPM?
I can rev it. I can do all that, but as soon as I put it in gear, and the gear feels a little rough, too, like when I put it in drive or in reverse, but it goes in it. And then once I start, you know, giving it some gas, you know, it just goes up just a little bit, and then it revs itself right back down. Not really a jerk, but it feels like a little bit of a jerk on it. So
okay, does it? I bet it's better first thing in the morning, right?
A little bit, yeah. But I've been trying. Like this morning, I got up and like, all right, let's see. It's been calm overnight. Let's check it out. But it still started doing the same thing. Like, so I'm worried, you know, because in my head I'm playing a lot of $1,000 to do something to, or it might be just something simple, but okay. Right now I'm just worried.
Okay. How many miles are on the car?
240,000.
Has the transmission ever been worked on?
It's never been worked on. We got it brand new. We've changed fluid maybe once or twice on it.
Okay. 200. What did you say? 250,000.
Just a little under that, like 240.
Okay.
I believe.
So it's been around the world ten times. Okay. It's been around the equator 10 times. Now I can tell you right now, I am 100% sure. Either the transmission has gone to transmission heaven, or it's low on fluid.
All right.
That's it. One of the two. The symptoms you have described are going to be one of the two.
Yeah, well, I checked the fluid, and it was giving me a good level, so okay. I'm thinking probably the other.
Okay, but you need to make absolutely sure, and the dipstick will tell you what it needs. Warm in park, warm in neutral, you know, or cold here. Right. Just make sure you're checking the fluid right now. When you pulled the stick out, was the fluid brown like engine oil?
No, it still had a little bit of the a slight tint of pink, I guess.
Or red, yeah, red. Pink. Yeah.
Just a little bit. I mean, it was getting to that darker, you know, oily. Okay.
The only other thing I would do if I were you is I would add a quart of fluid to it, and I'll tell you why. The valve body is above the liquid level in the transmission oil pan, and then there's mm-hmm. a filter that's supposed to be submerged. Okay. Sometime we develop a leak, and a hydraulic leak, above the liquid level, which means it slips like crazy and doesn't go into gear. When you overfill it by a quart, it's a diagnostic process. So you overfill it by a quart, and all of a sudden the sump gun runs perfectly, then everybody knows that we got an air leak above the fluid level. And all we have to do in the valve body is go find it.
All right.
So just add a quart of fluid and see what happens. What part of town do you live in?
I live way in the west side, like 90, what, the Loop 101 and the 10, really, basically? Yeah.
Okay.
And I did have a great body, you know, place that I'd go, but they just closed down. So I'm like, I'm stuck.
Okay. Well, you can go to MarkSalem.com, and I've got a list of what I believe to be the best shops in town.
All right.
And so if you want to go to MarkSalem.com, you can do that, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you for the info.
You bet. Thank you. It's the old things that the gray-haired guys taught me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I hung around with Mike and Leon from a transmission shop and since 1976, and they taught me those kinds of things. Overfill it. Why? Because I told you so. No, I need to know why. And then I say, I'm driving down the road, and there's all this transmission fluid coming out of the dipstick tube. You put too much in it. Well, I thought if one quart... Why don't you ever follow rules? Why don't you talk to my wife? You both have the same problem. Anyway, 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us and have a car question. It's free. 602-508-0960. Sitting next to me is Nate, and he owns Strictly Diesel up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. He's been around. He's been one of our go-to guys because I can always run something by Nate. And there's times, 1 out of 10 calls, he's calling me. And it's usually to want to know what I had for lunch. 9 out of 10, I'm calling him for a little bit of help. But Nate Dutton runs a good, clean shop, and he's well known for being fair and being honorable. So if your Ford is throwing all kinds of codes and it hardly go up the hill, Nate can probably talk to you about it, and you might or might be, he might be able to get close to the diagnosis, but there is no, you can't possibly be firm on your diagnosis unless, the car's in front of you and you've had a chance to check it. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour. And Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting here next to me. And if you have a diesel question or a car problem, any kind of problem, we're not going to say we're not going to handle it. We're only going to handle diesel calls. We'll handle gas calls and motorhome calls and all that stuff. 602-508-0960. Action Auto's right down the street from you at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom's a good guy. He's been around since 1983. And Tom and I met just before that. He was working for John Rang selling big engine analyzers.
Oh, wow.
And he was selling. I bought her, and he bought the one that John Rang had, which was the something else. And I don't remember what the heck the name of that big. It was, remember the customer said, put it on the scope and it'll tell
scope,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sun or?
Yeah. No, it wasn't a sun.
Yeah.
But anyway, I didn't buy the one that Tom that had, but we're still friends and have been for a long time. And you know he's as honest as the day is long. He's a great guy. And so if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley and you need your gas car taken care of, then Action Auto Repair is a great place to go. Gene, thank you for calling. How can I help you?
I have got a 2019 GMC with a Duramax diesel.
Okay.
It runs great, but when I moderately accelerate, there is a vibration behind the fire, right by the firewall, behind, right in front of the passenger area. I have not been able to track it down. where it's at. It has nothing to do with the performance of the truck. The truck runs great, but it's just annoying. And I didn't know if you'd ever come across that where there's this vibration that's going on behind there.
Okay, now
it's kind of like where the overflow water, the water reservoir is.
Okay,
in that area.
I need to ask you some questions. This is kind of give and take. When you talk about a vibration, that's a feel, and then
well,
you
no,
also
I don't feel it. It sounds like a horn. Sounds like a tuba.
So now it's a sound. Okay.
Sound, vibration, sound. I don't feel it in anything.
Okay, stop. This is give and take. I ask questions and you answer them. Explain briefly exactly how you make it happen.
Moderately accelerate. Not hard. If I go hard, it goes away. If I go real soft, it goes away. But just kind of moderately accelerate, and it'll happen every time.
Go, Nick.
Possibly a boost leak or possibly an exhaust leak of some kind. And that is possible that it will not affect the operation of the truck, but it may be just enough to where you hear that and get the sensation that something's going on.
And that would give you both. That would give you an audio, and also you'd kind of feel it in your skin.
Right. Right.
And so that's something that most guys could probably take a ride and have you demonstrate it. If you took my guy out and you were gone for 42 minutes, I'm going to be really mad at you, especially when the technician said I knew what
I
it was in 5 minutes. So, do you have a shop close by that you could take it to and say, don't do it on Monday morning
probably,
or Friday afternoons, but you're going to do it when they're slow. Can you do that?
Yeah, I'm up at North Peoria, so probably your guy there, Strictly Diesel, would be the closest shop.
Yeah, okay, all right. And again, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are really busy. But and then if you take Nate to lunch, it's a little cheaper. But he eats like a horse. So, and when you meet him, you're going to see that he's 7 feet tall, and his hands are like tennis rackets. But I think this is something that a seasoned gray-haired guy like ourselves is not going to have any struggle with this whatsoever.
Right, right. Best thing, stop by. We'll go for a road test. And we'll start there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Good luck. Thank you, Gene. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. On the other side of town, Thompson, Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa, which is the only shop in Mesa that I endorse. Their families used to run mobile Shell gas stations and Shell gas stations back in the 60s and the 70s. These two young people married the Thompson and the Vivian family together. Yeah. And I worked for one of the Vivians when I was in high school in 1968 at a Shell station at Broadway and Priest. So I've known those families since then, and they were always the head of the class. They had great operations, they had great mechanics, they had great people, they had great gas prices and everything. So when you have Brian and Thelma marry up those two families and have a car repair shop, keep in mind that Brian and Thelma have been around for a long time. So they were born and raised in the gas station business and
awesome.
Car repair. So if you're in Mesa,
awesome.
Thompson's is on Main Street in Stapley. And when it comes to shops in Mesa, he's the one that I suggest people go. So anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll take your call. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, and you're welcome to use them. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me, and we're going to take two calls in just a second. Three calls in just a second, but I want to tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair. He's up near you, I-17 and Bell.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. They do really good work, and I can't tell you how many times I have sent a vehicle to him that had been given a huge estimate. I remember specifically a lady with a motor. She had been told twice she needed a motor, and Kurt's put an oil pressure switch on it. And what was missing on it is the engine rattle that would indicate low oil pressure.
Right.
She never had that. So I said, go to Kurtz and tell him I'll cover the first half an hour. And he calls back and he goes, I fixed it in the first half an hour. The rattle. But he's done that many, many times. He's honest, dependable, I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. Let's go to Tom. Tom, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning, sir. I've got a couple of F-150s, an 07 and a 12, and I was wondering if you could recommend a shop up in Payson.
Coyote Automotive is the shop that my family has settled on in Payson. I want to tell you, though, the reason why I picked Coyote was this. We had a motorhome come to our shop in Tempe, and we put a differential in it. We didn't flood the hubs like we should have, and it only made it halfway to Payson. So it was towed to Payson, and it's my problem. So I called a couple of auto parts stores, and his name kept coming up as he paid his bill. He doesn't try our parts and put them on and then put them back in the box, and he's a good guy. So I asked him, would you bail me out? I'll have a new differential shipped. You install it. You flood the hubs and get the lady back on the road, and he did. And I paid full price for it, and I was happier than heck. And since then, he's done my mother-in-law's car, and I refer people to Dan at Coyote Automotive on Main Street. So that's my answer.
Very good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You betcha. Thank you, Tom. Mason, you're up next. Mason, how can I help you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, good.
Hey, so I've got a 2002 F-250 7.3. It's been a great truck for me. It's got about 230,000 miles on it. But I'm from Payson. I end up being in the mountains quite a bit. I've noticed recently when I'm at elevation and it's cold, you know, 30, 40 degrees even, not that cold, I cannot get that thing to start. I've really got to turn it over, and it's got to be plugged in or I can't get it to start.
Wait a minute. Nate's got both of his hands in the air. He's got both of his hands in the air. Nate, take it away.
Still a great truck at that mileage, but 7.3 has been notorious for altitude with starting issues, whether they were brand new or even now at your mileage. I tell people all the time that starter may be slow now at 230,000 if you haven't had it replaced already. The battery cables show their age at this time, high resistance, what have you. Batteries, make sure they're spot on. But the biggest thing with the 7.3 is the glow plug. You might have a module, you might have a relay, but the glow plug module or relay, and then the glow plugs themselves, could not be lighting like you think they're supposed to be. Over time and mileage, the tip doesn't light anymore. It actually lights up behind the tip, which is in the head, which doesn't help with cold starts. So you may have a number of things wrong, unfortunately, but anyone who's good with a 7.3 should be able to figure it out for you.
Could he use a temperature gun and gun the physical glow plug where the connection is, where the electrical connection is? Could he gun that, and would that tell him anything with the temp gun?
You'd have to have the valve covers off, and it's kind of...
Okay, never mind.
Kind of involved.
You're
yeah.
right. That was yeah. a stupid question.
I changed out the injectors at 180, and okay. I did the glow plugs at the same time.
Okay.
So I wouldn't think it was the glow plug. It certainly could be, but maybe a relay like you're talking about or something.
Yeah, relay or
module,
possibly.
If the glow plugs are working like they should, do you think I should be able to fire it up when it's cold at elevation like that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for
yes.
sure.
But that being said, okay. you know, are the batteries in perfect shape? Are the cables delivering voltage like they're supposed to and amperage? Is the starter spinning freely like it should? You know, just some of the things we see on the hard start problem involve more than just the glow plugs. It's other things. Another quick point,
right.
If you still have the original IDM or injector driver module, you may want to think about replacing that also, just for the fact that the injectors tend to be lazy because that module's not firing those injectors like it's supposed to. So higher mile.
That's an improvement you can afford to pay for, and it's well worth it. And yeah. they'll typically, that will be, the customer goes, wow. And,
it is.
And they like
it
that.
Is.
How much is a relay?
$30.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, really, just go to the Napa Auto Parts store and order a relay for it, a glow plug relay, and plug that thing in. And after that,
a test light does wonders for checking this too. I mean, he could put a test light on either pole of the relay, turn the key on, and do you have voltage on both sides? If you don't, there's your answer.
Okay. You know. And another thing he could do is when he's cranking, he could have his wife take a voltage reading from one of the two batteries.
Yeah.
And it better not drop below 9.6, but
correct.
We would really want it still to be up in the tall 11s.
Yes.
And if the battery's dropping down below 11, that could easily be your glow plug problem, because you already alluded to that.
Right, right.
And so the electrical system and the ability of the alternator to recharge, the ability of the battery to maintain the charge, a fully charged battery is 13 volts. 13. So when you get in up in the morning,
boom, you put your pigtails on either battery, doesn't make any difference, and you better be in the vicinity of 12.5 to 13.
Yep.
And right. When you start it up, there's no question it's going to go to 13 because the alternator is going to bring it up to 13 and maybe even higher than that, 14.
Well, and on that note, yes, check the charging system once it's running, but if it's cold, give it 2 minutes for the alternator to take over because the glow plugs are draining that system while they're on for that 2 minutes, especially at altitude.
Thank you for that, because you're right, and I didn't put that gap in there.
That's all right.
No. That's why we work well together.
That's right, yeah.
So
I got
the answer
one more quick question for you.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And this could probably, you know, be answered with a quick Google search, but I figured I'd ask.
If you say Google or YouTube, I'm going to hang up on you.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay.
When I turn my key on, you know, I get the little swirly that tells me my glow plugs are on, and then it turns off.
Yes.
When that indicator turns off, are my glow plugs still on?
Great question. Yes, they are. Now,
okay.
That being said, if you're at 200 degrees, no, they're not on anymore. It doesn't need the glow plugs at that point. But on a cold start, first thing in the morning, you could let that wait to start light go out and wait to start it for another 30 seconds. Those glow plugs are still on. So
Okay. Just
because the light goes out doesn't mean that...
We've lost power to them.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Like I alluded to, on a cold start situation, especially in the mountains, I guarantee those glow plugs are on for 2 minutes. That's like Ford's timer, the max timer that those glow plugs are on. So
he could turn the key on, and he could wait for a minute or so, and if all of a sudden he finds out that a minute to a minute 30, it fires up, then it's really cold up there. Now, if you're up in the mountains, I was just telling Nate during one of the breaks, I'm in Payson, and we had almost a month of mornings of 11 degrees.
Yeah.
And even my Dodge struggled starting up in the morning. And, of course, it's never seen. I went outside, and there was all the ice was off the truck because the truck shivered all night long because how cold it was. And it had never seen 11 degrees in its life.
Yeah, yeah.
And even my Dodge, it didn't go vroom. It went vroom. And it took a minute.
Yeah.
So anyway, try that.
All right, you guys. Really appreciate it.
Mason. Hey, and let us know if we guessed right, because you didn't pay anything for our guesses. You understand that, right? So
right.
If you want, you can email mark at marksalem.com, and I'll share it with Nate. Mark at marksalem.com. Thank you very much, Mason. JR, you're next. How can we help you?
A quick question about tools. These smaller battery jump starters, I've seen a person, I didn't notice it, but they're about maybe, a foot by 6 inches. There's different styles. Is there one that you prefer that a person should just keep in their car, have it ready to go in case you need a jump start or to help somebody that you know works pretty well and it's not too expensive?
Both of us know exactly what you're talking about. Both of us have those in our inventory. Both of us use those on a regular basis. And both of us, I don't know, do you have one in your truck?
I don't have one in my
truck. Okay,
no.
I carry one in my truck.
Yeah.
And I plug it into the cigarette lighter in the back seat.
Okay.
And so it's charged all the time. But I know what it won't do. A cold case tractor. It will not crank over that diesel on a cold case tractor. The answer to your question, what brands are you using?
Probably the same one you are. I can't think of the name of it.
I can't
see it, but
it's in a black zipper bag.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a push button on it that if you're really low batteries, you hit the button, and it says, okay, I don't see the voltage, but I'm going to give you all I got.
Right.
I want to tell you something. Those are expensive.
Those are
really expensive. They're a couple $100s.
Yeah.
But I mean, the only thing it wouldn't start was the tractor. It started my Volvo with an M11.
Wow.
It started it with no problems.
Wow.
So, But I also want to tell you that there's some at Walmart, depending on the amp hours. You're looking at the amp hours. There's some at Walmart and some of the places like that that do a good job on a gasoline and will do a good job on a four-cylinder. But the diesels are a whole different animal. We need a little bit more electricity. So, yes, we have them. Yes, we have them in inventory. Yes, we take them with us when we go out of town. Yes, we have them in our own personal trucks. It's a set of jumper cables, but you don't have to find another car because you've got the battery and the jumper cables.
They're a good investment for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought maybe there was now that you told me the options of looking, I'll just price them around somewhere about $70, $80 should be a good quality one for gasoline engines primarily is what I'm dealing with. Well, only that I'm dealing with. So I'll look for that. I just they've been really helpful in the last couple of weeks.
What's important as well is the amp hours of the battery.
Yeah.
They're gone. I mean, they're about a couple of years beyond their expiration date too. So those are getting replaced. But boy, the battery prices sure have jumped up. Good Lord, I couldn't believe how much batteries are now. But I guess they're only going to go higher anyhow. So if you need one, I guess get one now.
Let me give you the good news. Okay, a very giant percentage of our parts that we install in your car are made in China.
Yeah.
All right. The car, that it's sold from China to somebody who's going to transport it to the United States, and then from there it's going to go into a warehouse, and then it's going to go to a distributor, then it's going to go to an installer, to a jobber, and then from there it's going to go to an installer, and then it's going to go to you. Okay? The overwhelming 90% of the profit in that part stays in the United States because it was built for really dirt cheap. It's a good part, but it's stepped on 5 or 6 or 7 times once it gets into the United States, and everybody makes money. I'm the jobber who's going to install it in your car. So I'm going to pay the warehouse, and the warehouse is going to go to the WD, and the WD is going to go to the transporter. So everybody makes money on it. But yes, right now this is an issue, and we're struggling with a lot of different parts that are out there on boats that haven't come in yet. So
I hear you. Okay. Well, thank you much. Have a great weekend.
Thank
great
you,
show.
JR.
Excellent.
Thank you
show.
Very much.
Bye-bye.
And let's just talk really good about another shop that I really, really like is Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around since 1967. When you walk in the door, you're going to meet Ellen. Bob is in the shop along with Jeremy. They are a really good shop, and what they bring to the table is they bring experience, because Bob is older, gray-haired guy, and then the young buck is there too. And what really is impressive is the work that they do together. Here's my story. It was a BMW. It had water leaking out behind the glove box on the passenger side feet. The estimate was $3,300. The customer called me, the listener called me, and I said, where do you live? And they said, close. And I said, take it over there and have Bob do it. Have him look at it and just give you a price. But don't tell him the price. Just tell him. They said that it was a heater core, and I'm not going to tell you the price because I want you to bid it.
Right.
So Bob calls me up, and he goes, I fixed it. And I said, oh, what'd you bid it at? And he goes, I didn't bid it. I just fixed it. And I said, what'd you fix it? How'd you fix it? And he goes, the drain in the evaporator case was plugged up. And the evaporator case was full of water from the air conditioning system sweating.
Yeah.
So he says, we just stick a coat hanger up the drain, and all of a sudden, this trashy water comes out, and we're done.
Yep.
And I said, what'd you charge? And he goes, well, I charged him $312. And I go, what? And he goes, well, that their checkout charge was $312. He says, I think I charged him $75 to clean it all up. But he also took electric blowers and put them on the ducts to blow the water backwards out the drain.
Oh, wow.
That was cool. I thought, I said I would have just duct taped all the air conditioning vents and used compressed air to blow it out. But anyway, he said, I needed to make sure that there wasn't going to be any more plug-in. I needed to get all that stuff out.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was less than $100.
Wow.
And somebody else had bid it for $33. So
that's great.
They're good people. They're at Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Bob and Ellen, and I'm proud to recommend them. Okay, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Nate, diesel expert. Mark, expert in very little other than radio and hitting my marks. But 602-508-0960, and we're happy to help you. Again, one more time, 602-508-0960. Mark and Nate at your service, and we'll be back right after this.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and let me push a couple of buttons here to make it all work. Nate's sitting here next to me with Strictly Diesel. I learn something from you all the time. I during the break, I thought of this, but I didn't ask you on the break because we need to do this in front of people.
Sure.
You said on the Power Stroke, on the Fords, they're typically, even though the glow plug light goes off, they're still good.
So the Dodge, the intake air heater will work after it started.
Okay.
And speaking of the newer Dodges, my 17 that I had a while back, you could see it in the amp gauge.
Okay.
It would turn on and it would draw down to like 12 volts and then turn off and go back to 14.
Okay.
Duramax is very similar. You don't necessarily notice it on the Duramaxes, but they do stay lit for a length of time. So
don't go by the light. Don't think that the light duration indicates the heat you're going to get.
Right.
Because long after the light goes out, we're still trying to get the thing started.
And the longer the miles are on the glow plugs, remember Dodge doesn't have glow plugs, but the longer the miles on the glow plugs, chances are you want to let it go a little longer anyway, just to help that tip get nice and red.
And then we were talking to that one guy with the diesel at 230,000 miles.
Yeah.
I don't even believe that a Ford goes that far.
Oh, they go way far.
I'm just teasing you. I had to throw that in there. All righty. Well, let's talk about Auto Dynamics. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. I've known Chuck since 1982, and Chuck's a good guy. He runs a good shop, and he knows right from wrong. He's one of Sun City's largest and most trusted sources of automotive service. And as far as I'm concerned, when people ask me, I live in Sun City, where should I go? Then I say, Auto Dynamics. Chuck has a different philosophy. He doesn't pay his technicians a commission or a percentage of the repair bill because he says that ensures that they don't sell unneeded work. I say to him, there's other ways to make sure they don't sell unneeded work. But nevertheless, that is a performance-based pay plan when you start paying them a portion of what they do.
Right.
And every shop owner gets to do it. But anyway, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, a good place and the only place I can suggest if you live in Sun City where you can go. Brad, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Say, I have a 2007 Freightliner Sprinter V6 turbo. I've been running the T6 Shell Rotella 1540 in it, and I can't find Shell Rotella anymore. Wondering what you suggest for an oil weight and brand.
First of all, my opinion is brand doesn't mean anything. I would you can put whatever you want in it, but what would you would you stick with a 1540 or
540 may be a good one.
Okay.
Mobile One has some good options if you can find Mobile One.
How about a 020? We're pouring the heck out of that in diesels.
What year is this Freightliner?
2007.
That's right. You said that. I don't know that I'd go that low on an 07.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So
It has 190,000 miles on it.
Okay. So you can't do it wrong at this point by another brand. I would say whatever weight you were using with the Shell Rotella, I'd stick to that weight and maybe try a Mobile One or something similar.
Yeah, it's important to know that there's only four companies that pull oil out of the ground and make oil. And I'm going to try this. It's Shell, Mobile, Phillips 66, and one other one, and I always forget who it is.
Yeah.
But they're the ones that actually make it, and everybody else puts them in different bottles. And so I don't shop price, but I do have a relationship with Chevron. Oh, that's the other one, Chevron.
Chevron.
That's who I do business with. Yeah. Doggone it, Mark. Wake up.
And a hat.
And my hat says Chevron. Thank you. Why didn't you say something about that?
It says Valvoline, actually, but it's a sorry.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
I got the wrong hat on today. Anyway, I had a relationship with Valvoline from 1978 until when we moved into our new facility in 2000. And in 2000, we went with Chevron. Valvoline changed hands and all the people we had do business with us. But, do you have any oil consumption problems? Are you adding oil between the oil changes in your Freightliner?
No, it takes 12 and a half quarts, maybe a half quart low and 5,000 miles.
Yeah. And so it was born and raised on 1540?
No, I got it out of Camp Verde. They were running 540 in it up there,
okay. But
it's a little cooler up there.
All right, well, let me explain. It flows like a 5-weight when it's cold. Notice I said like. It has the properties of a 5-weight when it's cold and a property is of a 40-weight when it's hot. Here's what we know today. First of all, the thinner oil gets in faster, carries the heat and the trash out better, a thinner oil. We also don't need peanut butter inside our engines anymore. So the 30s and 40 weights are gone. On my Dodge, I'm using a 020 synthetic, and I'm doing 12,000 mile oil changes. And I'm real happy with the performance. I'm real happy with the oil. And we actually pour hundreds and hundreds of gallons of Chevron. trucks that we're responsible for that have that. The owner's manual will give you a wide variety of weights of oil because there's geographical differences between Minnesota and Arizona. Minnesota's cold, Arizona's hot. But really and truly, you don't need peanut butter in that Freightliner to be okay. So that 40 weight on the top end could easily drop to 30. You could go to a 530. But again, a diesel oil will make you feel better. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil's the one that answers the phone. And Gil, do we have anybody in queue? Okay, lines are wide open. You have one in five chances. 602-508-0960. You've probably had relationships with different oil companies in your whole life. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm betting, and we've not had this conversation before, I'm betting that price was not an issue if you moved from one to the other.
Correct.
And it typically has to do with service.
Yes.
And billing and ability to bill. And I think what made me move from my very first vendor was we had so much turnover. Just about the time you developed a relationship with your salesman, he was gone.
Right.
And then the story from the management was a bad story. But then later, that same salesman came to visit me, and he's representing a different oil company. And his story about why he left is quite different than the public story from the vendor before.
Right.
And so those were the days of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s when it got ugly. Today it's a little different.
Yeah.
So who's your primary pour?
I think we have the same one.
Oh, Chevron?
Dane.
Yeah, Dane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And we're doing that too. He gave us a good deal. He does everything he says he's going to do. So yep. If we ask for 300 gallons of this, and are you in bulk now and shooting out of guns?
Oh, yeah.
People don't understand how that affects us. How long does it take you to squirt? How many quarts of oil in the biggest diesel of the three?
15 quarts.
15 quarts. How long does it take you to squirt 15 quarts into a diesel? A
couple minutes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, and before we had to unscrew all the caps, break the foil, turn them upside down, wait till they went glug, 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 and all that.
Yep.
Like you,
yep.
We love that. We just grab the gun and pour the coal
exactly.
to the... Now, have you ever filled the valve cover up too fast where it came out the valve cover hole?
Oh, yeah, it happens. It happens.
And it makes a hell of a mess.
It makes a mess, and we're cleaning. Yep, it happens.
See, I know that... you knew the minute I asked that question that we had done it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no question about it.
Oh, yeah.
It just, you're pumping oil out like a fire hose. And if you fill the valve cover up before it drains down into the bottom of the motor, then you're going to see it.
Right.
And you're going to have one hell of a mess.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you can't give it back to the customer with any oil on the outside of the motor because it's going to smoke. And so you're going to be scrubbing and washing and down at the quarter car wash for a long time to get all that mess out of there.
Exactly. Yep.
So anyway, but I don't have any problem with the rest of them. I mean, Valvoline, I had a deal with Valvoline for, oh gosh, 1968. Shell before that, when I worked at a Shell gas station. Chevron, Chevron came back. But really and truly, for me, it's more about service and price because we're buying, like you, oil hundreds of gallons at a time.
Yeah.
And we're buying bulk, which means we don't have the packaging, we don't have the cans, we don't have the cardboard, and they know that too.
Right.
And so we're going to get it a little cheaper because they're going to just squirt it into our tanks.
Exactly.
And that makes it better. So, Dane is he's a great guy.
Oh yeah, great
he's
guy.
He's a great guy. He's done some fantastic changeovers for us and stuff like that, and we gave him a gun not too long ago that was leaking real bad, and he got it taken care of, and it cost us $20. And I think what they do is they have some guy internal that will rebuild them, and the kid's $20. I'm happy to pay $20.
Oh, yeah.
To have
a
gun fixed.
Yep.
So anyway, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960.
That's somebody.
Oh, and Gil, tell me who's in queue, and I'll take him now.
Say hello to David.
David, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you, sir?
1988 Dodge Ram Charger.
Okay.
This one's fuel injected. This is the first year Dodge decided to go fuel injection. Anyways, I'm reading this information. It talked about an electromagnetic diode for the single module engine.
What's the problem, though? Tell us which direction are we going?
Oh, no start.
Oh. I've never a technician for 22 years, and we process thousands and thousands of cars, and I have 20 bays, and I've never been in the area that you're talking about. Let me ask you a couple questions. It cranks over but doesn't start, correct?
Yes.
What are you missing, spark or fuel?
Spark.
Okay, just spark?
Yep.
Okay, I ask you that. You have to be sure about that, and here's why. The crankshaft sensor and the camshaft sensor are responsible for both spark and fuel pulses. So when I ask you if you have both, I'm testing that hypothesis. So not too long ago, we had a gasoline car come in, and it had no spark and no fuel, and it was the crankshaft sensor. It wasn't the ignition module. It wasn't any diodes. It wasn't anything at all. We just had lost the crankshaft sensor. Not too long ago, yeah. I had a piece of equipment up at the ranch go down, and I hauled it into Phoenix, and they put an ignition module in it because I had no spark or fuel, and the ignition module was $5,200, and it was no bigger than a piece of toast. And I wanted to just die, but I had no choice. So I don't know where your diagnostic is taking you, but this isn't that hard. Can I make a suggestion? Are you sure you have spark or not, and how did you test?
There's no power to the coil. And the Dodge, their crank sensor, cam sensor, goes through the distributor. That's how they signal that.
Okay. So did you... If you have no spark, did you pull the spark plug out and set it on the motor and crank it over and there's nothing there?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how about fuel? How do you know that the injectors are or are not spraying?
Well, it's a throttle body. You'd be able to see it. But I take the fuel line off when I turn the key on the fuel pumps.
Oh, I know, but the fuel pump supplies the injectors. The computer opens and closes the injectors. So you loosening up a fuel pump connection doesn't tell me anything. What I think you should do is you should get some carburetor spray and spray down the throttle body. Spray it in the mouth of the motor and then crank it over and see if it bites at you, see if it backfires, see if it starts, see if it tries to start or whatever. It's highly unlikely that you
did that.
Okay.
Now,
this isn't on a 1 to 10 scale for anybody worth their salt. This is about a number 4 or number 5, but it's not productive for you, for me to try to help you when you've already shut all the doors on me. And clearly, if you knew what it was, and you put that part in and it started and ran, it'd be one thing. But right now, what we got is a car that cranks but doesn't start. And you're diving deep into the electronics. And I'm telling you that happens maybe once a year, and I'm processing 20, 30, 40 cars a day. So we're not in that area of where you're at. You're deep into the bowels of that system, and I suggest that a fresh pair of eyes might not be a good idea for you, but spark and fuel, that's what it is. It could be fuel, and you've got a fuel pump problem or a fuel pump relay problem, or you've got a fuel pressure regulator that's stuck wide open and can't build pressure. So there's all those moving parts on the fuel side, and then on the spark side, you've got coils, you've got ignition modules, and you've got spark plugs. Did you pull any of the spark plugs out? Are any of them wet? And what color? If they're not, what color are they?
Now, this car's been sitting 5 years. It's been all nice and dry.
Okay. Okay. I can't explain to you how to do that because I've asked you all the questions I would normally do myself, and you seem to have the answers, and so I'm a bit puzzled. I can tell you that most of us, you're going to have to tow it into a shop, but most of us are going to can open the door at $200, $250, figuring that it's going to take a couple hours to track this down. But really and truly, this is probably a good master tech would probably track it down in an hour or less, I'm going to assume, because we're going to artificially inseminate the doggone engine with fuel. We'll use propane, we'll use gas, we'll use brake cleaner, we don't care, something flammable. So we don't even care about the fuel system. We need to get the spark system to fire the fuel, and the car runs and starts, and then boom, we're done. Now we know which direction to go. But I got to run, but thank you and good luck to you, David. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, when it comes to old guys in the auto repair industry, I'm going to talk about two of the guys that actually were there with wooden wheels and horse and buggy days. We're going to talk about Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, who was there long before automatic transmissions were even available. But Phil can go back to the Power Glides, and he can go back to the all those old Chrysler transmissions, and he knows those. And he says to me, what's important for Mark to understand is this. We're shifting the transmissions the same way. We're using the electronic to shift it instead of throttle, pedal, or speed.
Right.
And it's cool that he talks about it that way.
Yeah.
So if you have a transmission problem, Phil will drive your car with you. He's not going to let you take him or one of his technicians on a 35-minute test drive. You need to be able to show him the problem quickly. But he's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around a very long time. And if you have a transmission problem, he's the only transmission shop I can send you to. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. The other guy on the other end of town, Blackwell Automotive, is an old cranky guy. Gosh almighty, is he cranky. But the old cars, the vintage cars, and the new cars, he knows as good as anybody. He's at 40th Street and Greenway. And here's what the kind of, he's got that whole northeast Scottsdale area to himself. I can't find anybody up there that can pass the muster. But he does a good job. But every once in a while, he, cranky guy, calls me up and wants to cry on my shoulder, and I've been sending him bills, but he don't pay him. So, but anyway, I will tell you, Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenway is a good guy to go to. Let's go to the phones. Dennis, you're up first. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark, great show. Enjoy it a lot. Hey, thank your co-host there, does he do work on Detroit 60 diesels?
Unfortunately,
that'd
not.
That'd be the big one.
Yeah.
You don't?
Unfortunately not, no.
Who
okay,
would you send
here's
it
to? The second question that you can, well, go ahead.
Let me ask you, who would you send them to?
Heavy truck shop. I don't have anybody currently.
Okay.
No.
There was a guy down
by... I have a second question.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, in my Detroit 60, it's the second one I've had in 10 years, second different motorhome. And the truck center says I have to use their coolant. And this particular diesel I've got now has got the green coolant in there, which is not the Detroit coolant. But they say it can cause cavitation if you don't use, you know, if you don't use the Detroit coolant.
What's cavitation to you?
Well, they tried to explain it to me. It's when it gets so hot it bubbles like boiling a pot on the top of the stove. Is that correct?
Yes.
Wait a minute. So, we're talking about the boiling point of this coolant that we put in there.
We're talking about the additive pack, really, of what's in the coolant. Yeah.
All right. Let you and I talk about this. Hold on. Stop.
Okay.
Nate. Water boils at 212, and every time we add coolant to it, we move that up. And typically, we're in the 260 to 280 range before we start turning that liquid to a vapor. And by that time, the motor's toast anyway. At 280, the the older guys would say that cavitation is foaming of the coolant, of mixing of air and coolant. If he's talking about cavitation where we have foam, then their coolant doesn't have an anti-foaming agent in it, neither does anybody else.
Right.
But the boiling point that you're talking about, there isn't a coolant out there that doesn't turn to a solid at 290, 300 degrees.
When cavitation's brought up, it reminds me of the 7.3 IDI days when it was cavitation erosion.
Oh, yes.
Which the piston compresses and then the power stroke, that cylinder wall vibrates. So as the, and we're talking minute amounts of vibration, but that vibration causes small air pockets to develop along the cylinder wall. And when those air pockets explode, they erode the cylinder wall. So I think that's what they're talking about with this truck.
Okay.
Biggest thing with
so is the green coolant okay?
that's a great question. I don't know, and here's my answer, is because Ford has gone back to a green coolant.
Mm-hmm.
They've all gone to this oat style of coolant, which is above and beyond, and I'm sorry, I'm not a scientist. I can't explain it. I still don't get it. But
I'll help you with this. I want you to email mark@marksalem.com and give me your name and your address and give me the vehicle again. I do know a coolant expert.
Well, I will say this. One thing is for certain. Maintenance cures it all. So if you have an orange coolant, still change it at the intervals you're supposed to, and you'll be fine.
I agree 100% with you. And here's the problem. The problem is what are you trying to fix? It sounds like, what color is the coolant they want to sell you?
Mark, there's no problem. It's just when they did the routine oil changes on my other Detroit 60, they said you got to have Detroit coolant in this thing, or you're going to get cavitation. But the other rig I purchased, it's been about 10 years ago, it's got green coolant in, and it seems to work fine.
Well, the coolant color means everything. There's no such thing as a coolant cover that doesn't have a square box around it. And green is green, and orange, blue and blue. I mean, it's all something. The color says everything. So, but if you'll just send me the information and narrow this whole thing down to a question. What's the difference between International's coolant and anybody else's coolant might be the question that you want me to dwell down on.
And the answer may not be that far between each other. So, yeah, they may be very alike.
Yeah, and I'm also, I want to tell you something. If I heard one of my staff at the front counter, or if I heard somebody say that, I would be really mad. Because I would challenge their scientific analysis. Where did you hear that? Oh, I heard it from the guy at the auto parts store. Oh, boy. Let's run our business based on what he says. So I want to challenge those kinds of things. First of all, we have to define cavitation.
Yeah.
And second of all, we have to define, if it cavitates, what's the symptoms the driver's going to see? Is the gauge going to be varying wildly, or is the gauge going to go up and stay up? Is it, and where do you, Nate, where do you say, people say, where should I run on my gauge? And I say, I want them between half and three quarter on your temp gauge.
Yeah.
I want you at half. Everybody wants to be down near the cold side.
No.
I want you to be at half to three quarters.
Not anymore. Yeah, you got to be half to three quarter.
And that's all there is to it. That's where we need to run.
Yeah.
And the hotter the better, because we boil the water out of the oil. And water boils at 212, and we need to get the oil temp or the engine temperature and the oil temperature up above 212. And if we do that, then we're going to send the water that we're sucking, we're boiling out of the oil, out the tailpipe, and it just makes sense.
Yep.
So anyway, I'll help you. mark@marksalem.com. The rest of them, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to go straight to the callers. Horatio, thank you for holding through the break. You're next. How can we help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You
hey
bet.
Guys, I've got a 1946 Willys Jeep with a flathead four-cylinder motor that I cannot get to run anymore. Was running, had it running, had the motor rebuilt by a guy, and everything was running fine, and then all of a sudden she just started jolting back and forth like she was running out of fuel, and from there I had to tow her home. Since then I've changed the coil. I thought maybe immediately it was a coil issue. I've tested all the plugs. They all come back that they're getting power. I've dumped fuel down the fuel bowl and pulled it from the fuel pump itself, the line. It's getting fuel. It just cranks and cranks and cranks and nothing.
Okay. Nate, you want to go first?
No, I'm just going to say that's cool. That's an amazing vehicle. So
yeah.
that's way cool, but I'll let you take
it. It's going to be a geared drive. It's not going to be a chain, not a flathead. Right? I'm thinking it's got a gear between the cam and the crank.
Possibly.
First of all, by his description, he's already done spark and fuel.
Right.
So it has to be a timing. So in a normal car, we would assume the timing belt's blown off of it, and we've screwed up the compression, the power, the intake, and the exhaust stroke.
I guess that's a question. How does it crank over? Does it sound even?
Well, you know what? It was sounded like a normal crank just until I finally ran out of battery, and since then I don't even want to look at it when I go in the garage now because I'm so disappointed. But I've pumped so much money into this thing, I could have bought a brand new Jeep. But
well, this is not a hard one for us. I know you spend a lot of money, and I know you spend a lot of time and stuff, but Nate, finish this sentence. My best tech would spend maybe this much time finding out what That's it.
I almost wonder if carburetor is part of the problem here.
But he said he dumped raw fuel down the intake.
He did dump raw fuel.
Yeah. So he's got spark, and he's got fuel.
And I thought carburetor, guys, I actually changed it. I bought another carburetor just to see if that was the problem. And
well, next time call us first, because I'm going to have you take your propane torch and put a 3-foot hose on it and stick the hose down the carburetor throat and turn the tank on full blast. I don't care about the carburetor and the float and the main jets and all that stuff. I'll get it running on propane, and once I get it on running on propane and then I shut the propane tank off and it dies, then I know I still have a fuel issue, and I'll go get that. What part of town do you live in?
In Phoenix.
I know. Give me major cross streets.
35th Avenue, Cactus area.
Okay. You know, Blackwell up there at 40th and Greenway, this would, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2 or a 3 for a gray-haired guy. I don't care that it's a flathead. I don't care about any of that stuff. It's spark, fuel, or compression. One of the three. That's why it's not firing. The question is which one? But like you say, you got spark and you got fuel, and that's why I went after, I wonder if that flathead has got gear between cam and crank. I wonder if we've lost that connection.
Yeah.
And you could do that by pulling the spark plug out and making sure, put your thumb over the hole. I would disable the ignition system because if it bites you, it's going to make you cry. But put your thumb over the hole and you should have an intake and you should have a compression and you should have an exhaust. Stroke, by tapping the starter, you can literally feel the suck, the compression, and the exhaust. So,
sure.
I mean, that's
okay.
Kind of the path that you need to take. But don't buy any more parts, because you said you had spark and fuel. So I think
I did, yeah.
Stick a compression gauge in there. That'll tell us whether you're in time or not.
That would make sense with the roughness he described.
Yeah. Just go down to the Harbor Freight and buy a compression gauge that just shoves in the spark plug hole and have your wife crank it over with the throttle wide open. Disconnect the distributor. And just say, crank it over, honey, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, and that's it. And if you've got 30, 40, 50 pounds of pressure, then I think we got a problem. But if you've got 70, 80, 90, or even 100, then Mark's wrong. Okay?
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you, Horacio. Peter, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hello, gentlemen. I have a 2000 Plymouth Prowler. I've owned it for 20 years. The only thing that I've actually ever done to it is oil changes. It only has 8,000 miles on it, so it rarely gets driven. I want to start driving it a little more often, but I'd like to take it in somewhere and have somebody look at it for things, obviously, that I think it probably needs at this point. You know, new coolant, maybe, you know, the brake lines flush, things like that.
Okay.
Do you have a recommendation of where I would take it in the, like, Fountain Hills area?
Yeah, Greenway and 40th Street. I don't have anybody in the Fountain Hills area.
Okay.
There's lots of shops in the Fountain Hills area. I wish I could, and I'm not saying that they're bad shops. I just don't know enough to be able to say. But let me ask you a question. I agree that if it's 12 years old and it's got 8,000 miles, I agree that fluids are something you need to have done just because of the age. But that's all.
Yeah, it's actually 20 years old. It's a 2000.
Oh, yeah, it's 22 years old. So I agree that fluids, but on your brake fluid, we're going to stick some litmus paper in there, and we're going to check to see the moisture content, and if there's a pass-fail on it. So if it's okay, it's okay. We're not doing the brake fluid, but tranny, power steering, engine, diff, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yep.
But does it start and run right now?
It runs perfect. There's nothing wrong with it.
I'll tell you what, you want somebody to exercise that Prowler, give me a call and I'll come get it from you.
Okay.
And I'll be responsible for it, but I will erase that 220,000 miles you got on there, that 8,000 miles. But really and truly, just put it, the thing you could do to this horse is put it back on the road and make sure it's dependable, then take your wife to Flagstaff at Little America for the night. That's what you need to do. Just go drive that thing. You got a grandson that just turned 18?
I have a 22-year-old grandson and a 23-year-old grandson. A 23-year-old son who I'm sure would be thrilled to drive it.
As long as you get close to their, this is one dad to another, you get close to their nose, right, face up, and explain the ramifications of bringing my car home on a tow truck. and what alcohol and girls might have, how they affect the relationship between you and my car and my son.
Yeah, I'm not to that point yet, but I think I'll get there soon. I got to there.
Just drive it. Just drive it. Yes, I agree the fluid should be changed, but the first thing I'd do is I'd go take it out on the road. But why couldn't we test the coolant and test some of that stuff?
We could test it, yes. And my two cents on that car is being that old, check tires and date codes and such. If they're dry rotted or what have you, just be safe before
Bingo.
You go drive it. Yeah.
Bingo. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Those tires are certainly more than 10 years old. And at this particular point, I'm going to tell you, you've got to remove them and you got to put fresh ones on there.
Yeah.
They're Eagle GTs, but they're the original tires on the car.
Oof.
Well, 10 years. Yeah. The statistics clearly show that your life is in danger after the tire is 10 years old. And I want to tell you something, Salem mm-hmm. Boys, my shop won't even touch a tire that's 10. We won't patch it. We won't rotate it. We won't touch it.
Right.
And that's how adamant we are. It's not to sell tires. It's because people die all the time, especially in motorhomes, that people have tires that are 10, 15, 20 years old. So that's kind of what it is. I got to run, but thank you very much for the conversation. Good luck to you, Peter. Ron and Neil, you stay right there. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phones because that's where we belong. Ron, thank you for holding. What can we do for you?
Hi, guys. With all the cat converter thefts, I'd like to have a protective guard installed. I live in West Phoenix. I was wondering if you could recommend anybody over here and ballpark idea of cost.
That's yeah.
Let me comment on that. Risk and reward, okay? The risk is pretty small. The reward is for somebody to put a cage around yours is a whole lot, but they're also going to drill holes in your floor plan, and they're also going to be welding in places that the manufacturers would rather. Pragmatic point of view, do you anybody in your neighborhood had a cat taken yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. One of the things that I know kind of works pretty good is people are putting a 110 floodlight near their car and they put it to a motion detector. So if anybody walks up to the car, the light comes on. Mm-hmm. And as a former policeman, that's a pretty good deterrent because they ain't going to hang around to see who comes to the door.
Yeah. TV now, too. They're doing it in the middle of the day.
Yes, they are. They are. But in reality, it's a slow news day, so we're talking about people stealing catalytic converters. But let me ask you another question. Do you know personally anybody who's had a cat stolen?
No, I have not.
Okay. Nate?
Nope.
Okay, I'm looking at your daughter, and she said no, too.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fire up her mic because she uses bad words, and we can't take a chance. We got a controller.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple come in, and most of them are construction vehicles that are parked in the yard. And, of course, they can crawl over the fence, and they're in the yard. There's nobody spending the night there, and they can make as much noise. The noise associated with cutting off a catalytic converter using a Sawzall is unbelievably loud. Mm-hmm. And for the life of me, I can't understand how people in the neighborhood wouldn't hear that.
Yeah.
But it's risk and reward. I'm afraid for you spending a bunch of money for something that's you're so unlikely to experience. Now, if you put a strap between the front and the back of it, they'll just cut on the either side of the welded strap. So if you try to strap it to something, you might go to and if you put a bracket there where you hang the cat off of the bottom of the frame rail, they're still going to, with their Sawzall, cut the strap off. Mm-hmm. So, you know your insurance company's going to cover this, right?
No, I actually did not.
Yes, it will. Yes,
well,
this is
damage
to your car by others.
Well, to keep my premium low, I do have a $1,000 deductible.
Well, then you're going to be paying for it for yourself.
That's my point. Yeah. Okay.
But I just want to caution you. But there's a lot of people that are going to call up and say, "I had my cat stolen. I know, but I don't know anybody except the customers, and I bet we've probably seen 5 or 6."
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. And we're processing 20, 30 cars a day. So 5 or 6 over the last 30 days or maybe 60 days isn't really that big.
So a motion detector is a good idea.
Yeah.
I think that's the best.
You could be talking $1,000 just for someone to do custom metal work to cage in your catalytic converter, too. So depending on the shop, that's a tough one.
And the catalytic converter, to have it replaced itself, is less than $1,000. Is that correct?
No, it can be more.
It depends on the vehicle.
But, yeah. It could be more. But again, if it's a $1,000 deductible and it's a $2,000 or $3,000 one, keep in mind this isn't anything that you did. I work with the insurance companies a lot. This isn't going to count against you like you think it is. This isn't going to count against you if you had a DUI and you smashed into a whole bunch of cars at the valet at the local hotel. That's a bad one.
Yeah.
But you're sleeping. You didn't have anything to do with the catalytic converter. I'm quite sure your agent is going to protect you from stupid rate increases under the circumstances.
Got it.
Okay?
Okay. Thanks for your time, guys.
You bet. Thank you. Neil, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark, I have a 2018 Dodge Ram with a 6.7. What method do you use to replace the oil filter on that thing?
Well, we just drill a hole in the housing. Nate, take it, buddy.
That's one of Dodge's better ideas there. Actually, there is, if you look online, there is a filter lid that basically what happens is you unscrew the filter from the fender well, you let it drop. There's this lid that screws into the filter, and it's got a little hook on the top of it. So with that hook, you can pull the filter out through the fender well. Much less mess that way. The filter is going to be full of oil. I would recommend you do it cold, just for heat and what have you. But that's the way we do it.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like without that lid.
Yeah, the lid is what is key. Now, there used to be only like one or two people that sold it, but you can find them everywhere on the internet now.
What's the search words for that?
Cummins oil filter lid. Okay. I would try that. Yeah, there's got to be something that's going to pop up. And they come in aluminum or billet or plastic even now. So there's options that are very affordable.
What's your shop using?
All the above.
Okay, well, he's probably going to do this once or twice a year, so the plastic one or the most cheapest one would probably be his best bet. He doesn't need the billet one.
No. And keep in mind, the billet one is one of those that I bought that was like first out.
Yeah. How much did you pay for it? You remember?
Oh, I don't remember. A
50?
Maybe
100?
50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And your problem, but the easiest thing to do is just take it over and let Nate mess with your diesel oil change, and that's what I do. I hand my keys to my wife and my son. But anyway, good luck to you, Neil. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
Charlie, you're up next. How can I help you?
Charlie dropped, Mark, so the lines are open again.
Oh, the lines are open and Charlie dropped, so we get to talk to Nate. It's fun to be in this business.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell you what do you like best about the business?
The change.
Okay.
It's something different.
Every day.
Yeah. It's not I'm going in to sit at my desk and this is what happens. No, it's this problem and this problem and oh, yesterday we had this and yeah, it's the difference every day that is intriguing. Okay. So
what I like is I like being the hero and fixing the car.
There's that
I
too.
Like that.
There's that.
I really like that. And especially when you get the hairy-chested guy that comes in and you open the hood and everything underneath the hood is new. Every ignition component, every fuel component, every relay, everything is new.
Yeah.
And then you find out the tank doesn't have any fuel in it.
Right.
The gauge is right, or the gauge says it does, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
And those kinds of things. And being the hero, there's an enjoyment to it because what you're going to do is fix their car, but it's not going to be in the number that they think it's going to be.
Right.
And it almost is never that.
Right.
And you can't, the checkout fee is one thing, but then we have three parts of the estimate. The checkout fee to find it, and then we have a fee, a labor and a part to fix it.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yep.
But sometimes there is no labor or part. Sometimes it's a bad connection. Sometimes it's something we can fix easily. Sometimes the last guy that put the fuel filter on it didn't get it snapped in and we're sucking air.
Right.
All that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So it makes a difference, but that's what I like. I like handing them the keys. And every once in a while, I'm sure in your shop, it happens. I'm going to walk this carefully. This happens once a year. Wink, wink. It's when you just dance the keys across the counter and say no charge. Because it was something simple, something easy. Plus, it's a customer that's been in for many years.
Right.
And it's not a first timer. It's not that. And it's, and you're just feeling real, you know.
I've done that for a first timer.
You're right.
It happens. Yeah.
And there's a good feeling about that.
There is, you bet.
And somehow or another, the next two or three days or the next two or three weeks, you're up to your ears in alligators and you're going, well, thank you for raining on me, but you can back off now.
Exactly.
Now we're the day or two or three behind.
Yeah.
So you just work on diesels.
Majority, yes.
Now, if a customer has a customer of yours that has a diesel, but his wife has a Lexus, will you do an oil change on the Lexus?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And tire repairs and maybe even brakes? I don't know.
No tire repairs, but okay. We'll do brakes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Simple stuff. Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing we have. We have lots of vintage cars that do business with us, but I like their mom and dad cars too.
Right.
You know, and now we've got cars out there that truly are on, right now what's wadded up my underwear something fierce is that there are repair facilities out there. And there's five different levels of repair facility. There's chain stores and there's mom and pops and then there's dealers and then there's independent repair and then there's specialty shops. We got all those guys. But somehow or another, we've changed the values of when you were supposed to be doing different services.
Sure.
And we're being told that you're in Arizona. You can't follow the manual. And we're being told that you need to have your transmission serviced and flushed for $575 at 30,000 miles. And I'm teaching people to say, let's pull out my owner's manual and see what it says.
Right.
Oh, it's a 100K service. Oh, but this is Arizona. No. I'll tell you what. Why don't you do this for me? I want you to write down everything you've told me and sign it and staple your business card to it. And they'll never do that.
Right.
They'll never, because they know that you're going to hand that to the AG's office for fraud because you're out there piping that you need to change the fluid at 30K and it's not the truth. It's
right.
Not the truth. We have a full synthetic in that transmission and it's going to last a long time. But right now with everything stretched out with synthetic oil changes, how long are you putting on the sticker?
We still put 5,000 on ours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're doing between 10 and 15, depending on what the manual says.
Right.
But when you do that, you're not going to see them for a while.
No, you're not.
You're not going to see them for a while.
And I tell everybody, oil's cheaper than a motor.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Those are the kinds of things. What bothers me about our industry is that we're changing the rules because the cars don't come in every year now. In the old days, saw you every 3,000 to 5,000 miles, and we got to rotate your tires every other oil change, and we did your fluids at 30, and then we did them at 60, and then we did them at 90.
Right.
Today, it's all brand new.
Right.
And when you have a new car, you're going to do fluids at 100K, and 100K is just depends on how many miles you drive a year. And spark plugs sometimes are 10,000, 20,000 miles.
Right.
And sometimes the spark plug itself can cost $30.
Exactly.
And so you don't want to change the spark plugs every 10,000 miles if they're $30 a piece, because $30 tells you that's a very expensive and probably well worth it spark plug.
Right.
You're not buying a piece of crap at $40 a piece.
No, definitely not.
So those are the kinds of issues. I think that what bothers me the most is that they're moving the oil changes back to 3,000 to 4,000 to 5,000 miles on a synthetic that really should be going 10, 15, or 20, depending on the manual. So all of a sudden, we've put a premium oil in there, but we're changing it at the 3, 5, 6, and 7 miles range, which is a sin, because that oil is designed to go well past 8, 10, 12, 15.
Right.
So whatever the manual says, it's written by the owner of who made the car.
Exactly.
And he knows best, or he or she knows best. So when you move all those parts around, and we see that all the time, people come in and they say, I want you to check my lower control arm bushings. If we hear that once a day, sometimes twice a day. Lower control arm bushings. Let me ask you a question. I don't have much time. Lower control arm bushings cause a clunk on a quick brake and a quick takeoff because the lower control arms are moving.
Yes.
So clunk up, clunk back. So I say, do you got any clunk on hard acceleration or hard braking? No. Then you don't have any lower control arm bushings. That's right. All there is to it.
Yep.
But I'll look at them for you. But those, they're good money in those. And you can sell the whole arm and the two bushings and the alignment and the installation and make a whole lot of money. But you're taking parts off that you didn't need to.
Exactly.
Thanks for spending your Saturday with me. Nate,
yes,
from Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And I'm here every Saturday, and you can also email me at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com, and that's where we have the list of best car repair shops, and there's some FAQs there. I'll see you next week.